Good morning. Call the meeting to order. This is State Government Finance Committee for Wednesday, January 26th. And we're still a couple short of a quorum here, so we'll hold off on the minutes, but we want to get started with our presentation. So as soon as we have a quorum, we'll interrupt and so, Mr. Gana, would you please come forward? Welcome. And we're pleased to have you with us to report on the important work that was done this past year on innovation and services. So please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Gopal Khanna. I am currently a senior fellow at the Technological Leadership Institute at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here to report to you the findings of the Commission on Service Innovation, which I had the great honor and privilege of serving and being part of, and as the lead co-chair last year. So thank you for inviting me. It's just a privilege to be here.
Thank you.
What I would like to do this morning, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, is, and hopefully all the members have in their handout the report that was published a few weeks ago, Minnesota Commission on Service Innovation, as well as you have a PowerPoint, copy of the PowerPoint presentation as well. So I'm going to walk through some of the thoughts and share with you what the findings were and where we are and where the possibilities are going forward. This Commission of Service Innovation was put in place thanks to the bipartisan legislation put forth by Senator Terry Bonoff and Representative Keith Downey, who is here, a member of this committee. I laud them for their effort, and we in the commission felt that that bipartisan legislation really set the stage for a very strong and powerful conversation that happened over the next 6 months. The mission as put forth by this bipartisan legislation, which was signed into law by Governor Pawlenty, was very clear for us. So our work became quite easy. It was rather large, but very easy in the sense that we knew that our mission was to find ways and come back and report on opportunities as well as strategies that would be possible to re-engineer the delivery of state and local government services. The focus was really narrowed down to what are the opportunities to find a better way to innovate and deliver the services to the citizens. The team was quite large, 19 members, and it consisted of people with a very strong, diverse background. We had members from the business community. The chamber was represented, so was Business Partnership, as well as Minnesota High Tech Association. Nonprofits were included, Bush Foundation, Citizens League, Nonprofits Council, the Wilder Foundation. We had very strong representation from the unions. All our large unions, AFSCME, MAPE, and SEIU were represented. There were actually four members from these three unions. We also had education representation, both from MinSCU as well as University of Minnesota. We had local governments representation from AMC counties, League of Minnesota Cities, and townships as well. So, and in my capacity as a CIO for the state of Minnesota, and when I was serving in the administration, I too was a member of this commission. So what you had, Mr. Chairman and members, is a very broad-based membership of this commission, which was really looking at government from outside in. Very rarely has this kind of effort happened, and it's my understanding that Minnesota was among the first states, or the only state in the country, that took that kind of an approach to look at our delivery of services to citizens and how they can be improved upon. A very diverse group, a combination of public-private backgrounds, a very balanced group, and extremely knowledgeable members who brought in very pragmatic and an operational perspective while they were also thinking of futures, and they were very results-oriented in their approach. What we did as a group over the last 6 months was basically come from many angles, looking at the operations of government and delivery of services. And we, at these monthly meetings, we not only talked about as a group, but also had subgroups created which looked at looking at the what is the problem, what is the case for change, why should, and what's the opportunity. There was a group that was focused on looking at what the vision needs to be and how we steer our delivery of services in the right approach. Enormous amount of emphasis was given to examining the shared services opportunities. What are the pockets of excellence today and how shared services can be scaled to make the government and the working of the government more efficient, effective, and citizen-centric. A lot of conversation centered around the workforce engagement, the culture, what it takes to have an innovation organization. We, of course, talk a lot about innovation happening, and I'm sure a lot of you were there on January 12th on the day-long retreat at the Humphrey Institute, where we had a speaker from Dublin, Larry Keeley, who talks about innovation in a much larger sense. And and in his presentation, he talks about not only how major corporations have brought in innovation in their enterprise to improve service delivery, but also create a competitive advantage for themselves, and how state and local governments can do the same. So our approach was rather large when we talked about innovation and looked at workforce as a very important component of making innovation happen. We looked at the processes and the governance structure going forward and have some recommendations in that area for you. And also we looked at the how in this new paradigm of digital era that we live in, that it's important for us to engage the citizens, not only be open and transparent, but also provide a mechanism and the tools and the capabilities so that they can be involved with their government. So it was a rather large and extensive view. Here are some pictures of some of the work sessions, and of course you can see Representative Keith Downey over there sitting there very thoughtfully. He was engaged, he showed up, so did Representative Senator Terry Bonoff and Representative Phyllis Khan and others, and Senator Anne Rest. So they're coming in and participating and showing up really kept the workings of the commission going and very focused in its work. What did we find? The commission basically found that, and you've heard this from the state economist and state demographer, that given the changes that are taking place, even when the recession ends, the state will still be facing daunting challenges that will arise from changing demographics as well as the economic realities. So the shift in population and the aging of the population and the diverse population mix that is happening over the next 10 to 20 years, what you will see is that even when we prioritize all our spendings focused on K through 12 and health and human services and other major initiatives, in nutshell, even if the revenues grow and the way the expenses are growing, we will really have no monies left for other programs and initiatives of the state by the year in the next 25 years. So what we really have before us is a train that's coming in from an opposite direction. So what the commission felt was that time was now to look at ways to really rethink the operations of government. What I'm going to walk through is the 10 recommendations in this report that we have that you have before you, but let me go through some of the recommendations which offer both near-term opportunities as well as long-term possibilities to totally redesign and restructure the operations of government. The first set of recommendations pertain to how we can leverage the shared services. There is a lot of work that has taken place in Minnesota government, both at the state executive branch level as well as in counties and cities, where the possibilities are huge to leverage shared services. What is really happening is, if you look at the organizational structure of our government, it is silos, and everybody talks about the vertical silos. These silos have emerged and evolved over the last 50 years as new programs were put in place and vision put in place by the Congress or state legislatures. The bottom line is these vertical silos have a lot of back office operations that are common to all, and that's where the shared services can be leveraged to really eliminate duplication and redundancies. If you look at the construct of government over the last 100 years, the original goal was to curb corruption, fraud, waste, and abuse that happened 100 years ago in the system. So the bureaucracy construct was to basically have a organizational structure that was very deliberate, thoughtful, with audit components and pieces put in place. However, there are two unintended consequences that have happened and over a period of time. So as you look at these vertical silos, we have a lot of redundancies and duplication in the system. A shared services platform can remove that and extract enormous amount of savings, as well as improve delivery of services in a more cost-effective manner to all programs. So we have a set of recommendations that talk about the possibilities and the opportunity that legislature as well as the administration have going forward to leverage the shared services platform and build it and take advantage of it going forward. We talked a lot about budgeting. The budgeting, the way it is done right now, it's pretty much by program. It's very program-centric. It is not outcomes-based budgeting. What we believe in the Commission is that we need to rethink our way as to how we budget in government and take more of an outcomes-based approach with the measurable results, as opposed to budgeting for the program, have a baseline. So if you want to change and do any transformational work, it is always incremental, as opposed to rethinking and saying, I have this much of funding available, what is the outcome needed, what do the citizens need, and how do we reposition or repurpose the available funds in government for better outcomes and better service to the citizens. So that's an area that you may want to look and read up and think about. The third area that we talk about is finding new ways to create new way of delivering services. Look at charter agencies, performance-based organizations that have been tried in other jurisdictions and which create a new way of relationship between legislature and service delivery organizations, and they're more targeted towards being outcomes-based with measurable results, so you can periodically look at how the performance is and take advantage of a new way of doing business in government.
We have a question, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Khanna, thank you for this, and thank you for your work. And I'm encouraged to hear all this talk about new ways of thinking and in particular, budgeting for outcomes. I think that's a healthy discussion. I know lots of members of this committee, Representative Downey and others, have been very active, and I appreciate that. I'm wondering, when we're talking about budgeting for outcomes or for results, could you explain a little bit more about what you mean? And the reason I ask is, I've heard some people question the idea of rewarding results with necessarily more money, when often it's the areas that don't get the results that need the money, whether it's pollution or education or whatever. It may be that a bad result in some cases, in some instances, means you need to be spending more, not less. Is the idea to reward success with more money, or is the idea to look at where the problem areas are, where money can make a difference, and maybe it doesn't always make a difference? Could you just expand on that a little, and then I have one other follow-up.
Mr. Chairman, representative members of the committee, your question is absolutely right, and as a matter of fact, there'll be some examples that we'll be talking about when the next panelist comes up and talks. He is a county administrator and will give you examples of where outcomes-based budgeting can help the delivery of services. You're absolutely right. I think going forward, the legislature will have to take a holistic look at the service delivery and figure out where outcomes-based approach works best and where you may have to have come up with a different approach. The Commission felt that the legislature and administration need to take a look at that and figure out where its applicability is best. So we did not go into defining exactly where you could potentially use it and not use it. We left that work for the Commission to look into, should the legislature would like the Commission to do that work going forward. The Commission is in place until June of 2012. So we did not get into the specific details of where it is applicable.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just as a follow-up, I think that point is important, and I'm open-minded on either end. But whether the problem is the achievement gap or air quality or water quality. The question is, let's say a government entity or a particular office isn't getting the result that the legislature or someone else has set or has not met a goal. Which way does that cut? Does that mean that they get less money or they get more money? I suppose it depends on the processes. If the idea is, well, we still haven't met, say, an air quality standard, money may not always be the answer. Sometimes spending less may be the answer. I don't know. But on the flip side of the coin, I guess the question would be, if the mission is accomplished, let's say we've met an air quality standard, does that mean that Office X or Agency X gets kind of a reward for having attained that goal? Or is the idea, no, they don't get a reward, they don't need the money anymore because they've attained the goal? I'm just wondering what your outlook is on that. And one other question I'd add to that, Mr. Chair, if I could. We've heard some talk this session about zero-based budgeting, and I'm wondering if you could comment on that. It seems to me that, in theory at least, it's a great idea to look at every program and every agency from the ground up. My one practical concern is that we're not a full-time legislature, full-time year-round. I don't think we should be. And I just worry a little bit about doing a ground-up approach, whether we really have the time to do that here, unless we do it on a revolving basis. And I've heard that as a suggestion that maybe every fifth year or every sixth year an agency gets the zero-based budgeting treatment, and that way we can cycle programs in and out. Do you have any thought about that?
Mr. Chairman, representative members of the committee, we in the commission did talk about some of these issues, and we deliberately decided not to go into details as to coming up with specific recommendations and approaches, but our hope was that this is exactly the kind of question that will be asked and probed, and conversation is launched not only in the legislature but in the broader public. The key we felt was that we need to move away from being very program centric in our organizational structure as well as, and therefore, budgeting and management structure, and becoming more citizen centric. And that's a very different paradigm in terms of taking from being program centric in terms of both management of resources, because then and again, the next speaker is going to talk about different approaches that they're taking at the county level, where the difference between a programmatic mm-hmm. approach versus a citizen-centric approach, where we are looking at the citizen and saying what kind of services the citizens want given the within the parameters of the existing resources, as opposed to being program-centric and saying all these programs would be delivered. So the questions are right that you ask, and I'm glad that thoughtful approach is coming forth, because that's what the Commission's hope is, that this will lead into conversation and therefore refining and coming up with what's the best answers for the state.
We have some guests with us that we want to welcome, participants in the High School PAGE program from around the state. Happy to have you with us here today. This is the State Government Finance Committee, and we're in the process of hearing a report from a commission that the legislature set up last year, a commission to look at ways in which we can innovate in the providing of services to the people of Minnesota. And so that's what we're in the middle of now. Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I'll wait until Mr. Kahn finishes, and then I want to get back to some of Representative Simon's points, but it might be helpful to see the rest of the presentation first. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Kahn, maybe you could give a little bit more of a definition of the different terms you have here. Budgeting for outcomes versus performance-based organization. Can you clarify the definition of those, as well as charter agencies? What are the different nuances that we need to keep in mind as we think about those terms?
Well, I would reference this document again, where we talk about all of those entities and how the composition is set up. Outcomes based is based upon what are the desired and expected outcomes from the performance perspective, from the citizen customer's perspective, as opposed to deciding a program and then structuring the organization. So when we're looking at service delivery organization, if an organization is structured based upon a preset program and funding is provided, the structure then assumes that program the rules and the objectives that's put forth in the program become what the goals of the performance of the organization structure is. What we're talking about, if we want innovation, we need to look at the organization structure completely, but also rethink, are those the right outcomes? Is the program achieving the right outcomes that we are looking for? And that would have to be literally done by program and agency by agency. The commission did not have the time to go into the details of that. What the commission felt was that we need to rethink our approach in government and examine outcome-based approach to managing an organization. If we were in the private sector, the commission felt, we would constantly rethink our business model from the point of view what we are delivering in terms of services. So why not in government as well? Just because a program is in place and is being executed may not really mean that the outcomes that are desired by the citizens and expected are being achieved. So, Mr. Chairman, to come back to answer your question about some of the definitions are over here. Charter agencies there's been talk about charter schools, etc., where they are. Funding is provided based upon measurable outcomes that have been decided upon. So if those are not achieved, funding can be withdrawn. And the focus therefore becomes on service delivery and the outcomes, as opposed to taking funding for granted and hoping that whatever the work is done is fulfilling the demands and the needs of the citizens and the public and the public officials at large. So, and let's move along. I'll have some more definitions for you as well.
Proceed.
In addition to recommending that the legislation and the administration needs to look at how outcomes-based organizational structure can be set up, what we felt was that the state and local government, and this includes all units of government, counties and cities, need to look at lean programs and business process reengineering. What we know from demographic trends is that over the next 10 years, with the aging of the government workforce, as they leave, there's a unique opportunity to re-engineer the work processes. When the organizational structure of government was set up 50 years ago, it was very manually intensive. Over the last 50 years, technologies have been introduced, but there's not been a complete overhaul and redesign of the organizational structure as constantly happens in businesses. Businesses are constantly making themselves more efficient. So one of the biggest areas for opportunity is productivity gain, and productivity gain will happen if there's serious business process reengineering of our agencies, counties, cities, and all units of government. Over the last 2 years, state of Minnesota experimented with lean, and thanks to one of our major companies here in town, General Mills, they came forth, they brought the know-how and the knowledge, there was training that took place, and those lean capabilities were introduced in several agencies. And again, the report cites some of those outcomes and results and the benefits that were accrued. Lean program needs to be expanded to include serious business process reengineering and redesign of the government operations, recognizing fully well that with the aging of the workforce, we have a unique opportunity to leverage technologies to make the workings of the government more efficient, effective, and citizen-centric. So the lean program is an accepted program and has been used extensively in other states as well. And private sector does it because they want to constantly renew their service delivery platform. We also talk about creating incentives, because without incentives, innovation cannot happen in any organization. In government, we do not have enough incentives, both either at an organizational level or at an individual level. And there was a lot of conversation in the commission meeting about providing incentives or creating even a quasi government entity, a corporate-like structure where even private sector funding is sought to promote innovation and create really the climate for innovation. When we talk about innovation, and again, some of you who were there at the meeting on January 12th and heard Larry Keeley talk about, it's about building capacities and capability in the organization to make innovation happen on an ongoing basis. It requires providing the tools, incentives, and the capacity building so that innovation work can happen continually and an organization can be more efficient, effective, and customer-centric at all the times. So here was another example or suggestion that you may want to consider is making available investments with the expectation of returns happening, or having in this quasi government entity from a governance point of view ability to give grants to entities that want to innovate and need some seed capital to do some good work. We felt that investments would be needed, but a lot of investments can be drawn from within the enterprise itself, but the seed capital and investments would be required to further the innovation work. The final set of recommendations centered around data and information. We in government have enormous amount of data, and what we are unable to do is convert that data into meaningful information so that we can make both policy decisions as well management decisions. To give you an example, when 9/11 happened, we as government had data points on all the 19 bad guys, but we were unable to put all that data because we could not harmonize it and see it in one continuum. And as such, could not prevent that. So today in government, we have enormous amount of data, but that data has not been converted into meaningful information the way private sector is able to do and understand their customers and therefore improve their service delivery. Of course, we know about Google and Amazon.com and eBay, the new models of business operations where they leverage the information to serve their clients better. We need to do the same thing in government. We have enormous amount of data, but we are unable to harmonize it and then use it. It's not just having data available, it's also creating a platform whereby citizens can engage with their government. Today, in our private lives, we as customers are co-producers. When I want to do, when I fly, I'm able to do my reservations online. I'm able to print my airline's ticket and then get my reservations done. A lot of work is happening where people are engaged with their service provider. We in government are unable to do that because we do not have the platform and we live in a self-service society. Citizens expect that same relationship that they have with their private sector service providers with the government as well. They're also looking for transparency, accountability, and information. So government has a lot of work to do to harness and harmonize the data and produce the results or the outcomes using this data in a meaningful way for public officials as well as for citizen engagement. So what do we expect as a result out of this the work ahead? We believe that in the short term there is an opportunity to deal with the budget cuts in a much better way when we focus on the organizational redesign of government. And this is not just the executive branch, it's counties and cities as well, all units of government. I think recognizing fully well that we have a large budget deficit ahead of us and that the budget situation may not ease up for a few more years, we believe that by taking advantage some of the recommendations here, we will create a better mechanism for the government units to deal with the budget cuts that are coming up. We also believe that substantial savings are possible because as we introduce business process reengineering, lean processes, do things differently and extract redundancy and duplication, we can effect savings in the near term as well. If the commission felt that if we were able to save just 1%, that would amount to $250 million a year in savings alone. We believe that in the long run, by restructuring and redesigning the operations of government, we will be able to reduce the cost of operations substantially and improve service delivery as well. Citizens today expect the same level of service delivery as they get from their private sector service providers. And each time they have an experience with the Googles and the Amazon of the world, it resets their relationship with the government as well. What will be the impact on the workforce? As the workforce is declining, I think by taking bold approaches to redesigning government will help in that in that process as people leave. I think in the short term, the commission believes that actually in the long run, we believe that this has to be a partnership between workforce and the management. It is a team effort. It is both a top-down leadership issue as well as a bottom-up innovation issue where the workers are engaged. And that's exactly the kind of message that we hear when we go to the private sector. The General Mills is doing a lot of work in terms of with the lean effort, but all of their workforce is engaged and involved in that. While the top, the management provides the leadership to the enterprise, we believe that the commission believes that the recommendations can help realign the service delivery, and especially with the wave of retirements coming up. As next steps, the commission has already put this work out for public comment. As a matter of fact, all the meetings were open under the open meeting laws. The meetings were video streams. They were available to citizens for participation and engagement. So our hope going forward is that conversation will continue both with the citizens and public policy officials, but also with the legislators, leaders, and the stakeholders over the next few months. And that the commission is able to continue to meet and focus on other major issues that are ahead of us. The commission is good till end of June of 2012. So there's a lot of work that can be done as depending upon where you all as policymakers and all the stakeholders feel that we should be going. The bottom line is that innovation is critical to any enterprise, whether it be private sector or public sector. We in the public sector have not done enough to foster an environment of continual innovation. Innovation will make the delivery of services better. We know that. We've got tools and technologies available, but it's beyond tools and technologies. What is needed is an environment where there's capacity, capability, incentives that are made available so that people can become innovative and can deliver the services more cost-effectively. The end goal is to have a government that is more efficient, effective, and citizen-centric. With that, I would open the floor for questions, unless, of course, Mr. Chairman, you want to have the next speaker come in, give some real examples of what is happening at a county level, and then come back and we can both answer the questions together.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Khanna, looking at your slide here and on the next steps, and being that K-12 education and healthcare are the two biggest parts of our budget, and as you've outlined before, at their continued growth rate will eat up the entire budget, you recommend looking at specific areas for reform in K-12 education and healthcare. Have you delved into that very much yet? Do you have specific ideas in those areas?
Mr. Chairman, representative members of the commission, committee, no, we did not. We did not have the time in the last 6 months to go deep into each of those areas. What we are saying is that we can... The commission offers a unique opportunity because it is bipartisan commission. There's an enormous amount of intellectual capital that this group brings to the table. This commission report was unanimously accepted by all the members. So there is tremendous amount of work synergy that is already in place. And the next step would logically be to go and look at in a much deeper way the opportunities that exist in key areas for innovation.
Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Khanna, as a legislative gathering last night talking about just different things, and a gentleman that was there asked me if the legislature had ever considered doing away with parts of government from the state on down to townships. I'm just wondering if there was any mention in your commission and you're talking about streamlining and things like that, if there was any talk about doing away with the other either parts of state government or local government, such as the county or the townships or anything like that. It was just this is a federal worker that was I was talking with. That it was at a snowmobile conference across the street here, and he just was saying that he had just been in Sweden, and he just saw how much government and how much money was taken away for the people there, even though they came back with all the free quote things that the government gave to them, and yet he just saw it as he thought that we have too much government in the United States, and I just thought I'd throw that out and see if you had, in your talkings, even broached that issue.
Mr. Connor.
Mr. Chairman, representative members of the committee, we in the commission did talk about how consolidation and whether it be at the enterprise level or in regional level settings, etc., can optimize and make government more efficient and effective and citizen-centric. We did talk about the fact that there are opportunities where it could be, and there was conversation about why do we have so many counties and so many school districts, etc., and are there components that can be consolidated and leveraged and made better through use of shared services platforms. So yes, there was conversation about that. Did we talk about eliminating units of government? To the best of my memory, we did not go into talking about that. But then again, our hope was that in the commission was that there are opportunities to consolidate and use shared services platforms to make to get the kind of outcomes that you're looking for from the point of view of efficiency and effectiveness.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ghana, the previous question was a perfect segue to where I'd like to go. I know that this study is much broader in scope than my question. However, coming from higher education, the first thing I think of when I hear of enterprise platforms is just the software, hardware, moving from a system where the old style to one that's web-based and more user-friendly and it's cross-functional and the like. And as I visit many of the communities, both county and local, I know that they have a lot of work towards maintaining software systems, hardware systems, and so on and so forth. Does this move us in a direction where we have a central platform that's so user-friendly that we can realize some efficiencies at the local level in that area, information systems areas?
Mr. Connor?
Mr. Chairman, representative members of the committee, yes, today tools and technologies are available where large enterprises in the private sector are doing exactly that to make themselves more efficient and effective, not only to drive efficiency from the point of view of the end outcome, but worker productivity, but basically recognizing fully well that they need to use the workforce for competitive advantage and focus on their core competencies. I think government needs to do the same, and the opportunity is there. That's the reason why in the commission's work there was a lot of conversation and focus around leveraging and building the shared services platform. There are solutions like cloud computing and other web-based solutions that are available in the marketplace. Some of them are being used every day, both in the executive branch as well as counties and cities. It's not that people are not doing. The opportunity before the legislature and the administration is that can we scale that up and ramp that up even more so and take advantage of that. Those capabilities that can be available from the private sector. Private sector provides solutions that can be used by government quite effectively in these areas.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple comments. First, thanks to Mr. Khanna and all the members of the commission. I did actually get a chance to attend most of the meetings, and really a good collaborative effort, and I think good progress made on the mission that we handed for them. Just in terms of the sense of where this commission would go, I think Mr. Khanna has explained this, but there's kind of a two-year cycle here, hopefully, for this group. And the first year and the product of that you see before you, which is kind of idea generation and major kind of recommendations that need to be fleshed out. And I think the legislative session this year I personally feel like I owe it to the commission to advance the ball on a number of specific bills that take these ideas into very specific, tangible bills and ideas in state government. And then on the back end of that, the commission can meet again next summer and fall and maybe take it down to another level and provide us some even more specific recommendations next year. So that's really kind of the process and I think the hope here. And in terms of specific ideas, I know this is hard to get our minds around. These are new concepts and new terms, and they sound good, but then how do you actually practically implement? Because we have what we would call in the consulting world the current state. I mean, we have a bunch of legacy systems and organizational structures and ways of doing things, and they're finely tuned, and there's a lot of statute that supports it. So unwinding that with really, you know, big moves like eliminating a layer of government or something seems really formidable right now, and I'm not sure that there's the political will nor even the public interest in just, you know, radically yanking out huge chunks. Maybe we'll be there in 2 years, but I don't know for now. So I think some of the ideas, just to maybe put some particulars to this, this idea that actually comes from Representative Kahn and Mr. Khanna himself about consolidating more of our core technology functions into OET and running that as a shared service to all the other executive branch agencies, and maybe why not even to Hennepin County, Ramsey County, the University of Minnesota, and MinSCU. That's an idea, and I tossed a bill in to hopefully move the ball on that discussion and maybe even get that done this year. Could we do the same thing on the top of our SWIFT accounting system implementation, actually build a shared service center for administrative back office functions for our executive branch agencies? I just think there's a lot of ideas like this. Human services, just on the operational side, 87 counties delivering human services, when perhaps we could do that, the administrative part of that, not the case part, the, you know, the high touch part, but the back end of that. Could we do that at service centers, you know, 10 of them is a bill I had proposed last year, maybe even one. So I would encourage people, I'm going to drop in a ton of bills this year, and I don't know if we really have a chance to hear all of them or even come close to implementing them, but I'd encourage everybody to think about ideas that they have that they could bring to the table, have them heard in this committee and others, and see if we can't take these concepts and turn them into reality. And with regard to Representative Simon's point about how do you pay for outcomes, I want to highlight, I think maybe, I don't know, I probably don't know all these budgets and things, but the only thing I've seen in state government that actually pays for performance is a very small nonprofit called Twin Cities Rise that works with ex-cons and people in the kind of probationary world to get them skills and employed. And the state of Minnesota, I don't know if it's $700,000 or $900,000, our budget item for them, but we do not pay that organization unless and until one of their clients has been in a job with health care benefits for a year. And at that point, we actually reimburse them. And so we're actually really paying for outcomes in a novel way. Ideally, you'd have five organizations like that competing on outcomes per dollar and effectiveness, right? We don't have that yet, but the idea of, could we somehow replicate that model in state government? And I've actually got a really intriguing idea in terms of how we might expand that concept and pilot it in some other areas, and I look forward to bringing that bill before the committee for some discussion as well, trying to bring some kind of private sector concepts here into how we pay for outcomes. So that's one example and a place where I think we can leverage that concept that they've developed out there in their own nonprofit and try and replicate that here at the state. So anyway, just a few comments on the commission, and again, thank you, Mr. Connor, for your leadership in the state and on this commission.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Khanna, now that you're no longer in the executive branch, I'm hoping you can share with us some very honest and direct information about what it's like to actually try to implement a shared service model. When you were head of OET, OET has a very broad mandate in technology, and you are very small, and some of the other agencies are very large, and they have a lot of clout and a lot of power. And we've had no shortage of good ideas. Maybe there are more good ideas that are coming forward, but I think of, you know, all the 16E statute and all the things that OET is supposed to do. The Department of Administration has a number of terrific initiatives like the Small Agency Resource Team, SMART, the Office of Grants Management, their lean process. There are all these kind of good ideas that are out there, and they're little, you know, kind of buds on the vine, but they're not really flowering. There's a lot of resistance to this. I carried a bill 2 years ago on shared services for school districts, and it seems like no matter where you turn, if you're trying to push this, the problem is not one of ideas, of good concepts brought to government. The problem is political resistance. And how much time has, do you have any thoughts on ways of overcoming political objections? Because you've been fighting that battle for some time. And is that something the commission is going to take on? Any great ideas for how we get people to let go and try something new?
Mr. Connor.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, members of the committee, change and transformation is not easy. In 1993, IBM, a blue-chip company for 50 years prior to that, was almost going out of business. Lou Gerstner came in as a CEO. It took him 10 years to totally reinvent the organization, their mission, and redirect the operational infrastructure. We in government have much larger problems and challenges in dealing with change and transformation. And again, I'm going to take off my hat as the commission member and talk as a citizen, somebody who's worked in government. There are some systemic issues that we have. We constructed our government structure, we call them silos, and we are program-centric. So the governance structure, starting from the legislature, is down this way. Now, as we move in the 21st century, where organizations are looking to become more horizontal and flat, it requires a governance structure that is more horizontal and cross-cutting. So we have got assets residing in each program, and each committee structure is managing that. While when it comes to the use of technology and you want to build an enterprise architecture that means that serves the entire government, it's very difficult because your resources are residing and there's no accountability and governance across. So I believe that we'll have to rethink the governance structure starting in the legislature. It's a challenge because those assets may reside there and they are not available. Second piece is rules. There are a lot of rules that over the years have been put in place that become barrier, whether it be federal rules or state government rules and all the way down into local government. I'll give you an example. We get 90% match on health and human services systems from CMS. 30 states are looking to modernize their MMIS program. Each state, it'll cost about $150 to $200 million. CMS is content in giving that funding for each state. Think about it. There's, as opposed to saying five states get together and build reusable code using technologies and deploy a system which could be done at half the price. But the rules prohibit them from doing that. They would give us $150 million apiece. So the rules is the second component, Mr. Chairman, members, that come in the way. The third piece is the funding mechanism. To achieve transformation of the kind that we will have to, we have no choice, by the way, in government to totally transform and restructure our operations model, would require seed capital. So the expectation that any initiative should immediately bring cost reduction day one or within a two-year cycle is an unfair expectation. The fourth component is we do not incentivize in government, whether it be federal, state, or local government, innovation. On the contrary, innovation is penalized. If an agency or a leadership was able to extract and show $100 million in savings, what happens? Legislature takes it away. As compared to, say, in private sector, you can keep part of the funds, modernize your organization, and do more with it. Forget giving incentives to employees for ideas. So there's a lack of incentives in the system and the architecture of government as a whole. The fifth one is risk-taking. Innovation requires tremendous amount of risk-taking. And, of course, we can do things to de-risk initiatives. But there's enormous amount of penalty for anybody making a mistake in government. You try an initiative, you try an approach, if you fail, you're brutalized. In the private sector, if somebody invented, if I was with 3M and invented and filed a patent and it could not be commercialized, I won't be fired. What we'd be doing is scientists will be looking for ways to come up with the next version of the innovation to see how it can be scaled up. In government, the risk factor is too high. So when we talk about innovation, innovation has two sides to the coin. One is providing incentives, which you don't have in government. And on the other side, being risk tolerant. The next one is, sixth one is the short duration nature of a government. Every 2 years there's a change in leadership and the composition of the legislative body and the oversight committees, etc. And on one side it is very good, but from an operational perspective it is very disruptive. And that slows down the machinery for innovation and change. The last item is transformation requires bipartisan engagement. This is not a Republican or a Democrat initiative. And one of the reasons why we were able to make such great progress was because of the vision put forth by Senator Terry Bonoff and Representative Downey coming together and saying we need to look at innovation in a bipartisan way. So this has to be a work where all the stakeholders have to make a commitment to make it happen and be willing to work together for a new vision. And unless that happens, so there's no one barrier. It's a string of things which we all have control over changing. And if those things can be changed, you can just see a massive amount of unleashing of innovation in government. After all, Minnesotans do such great work in such innovative companies like Medtronic and 3M and others. So why can't we in Minnesota reinvent our government?
Representative Winkler, we need to move to our next presenter. Could you?
It's a very simple, direct question, which is: Can the director of OET stop a bad IT project in a big agency?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, members of the committee. As a matter of fact, I did when HeadMatch was not progressing well. I approached my commissioner colleague and said, "We need to pull the plug on the system." I believe $10 million had been spent, and the first reaction was, of course, how can we afford to waste citizen money? And that's true. But what happens is that if a project is not stopped after $10 million, we'll be staring at $100 million of wasted money because the project will go haywire and will not go into production. So, yes, it can be done. It requires courage. And when we did that, I walked up and I spoke to, I remember Representative Phyllis Kahn, she's not here, and I said, we should laud Commissioner Cal Ludeman for having the courage to stop the bleeding, as opposed to saying, oh my God, $10 million, you lost, where's the oversight? And because that's the reaction. And so, to answer your question, sir, yes, the ability is there, but we need to give courage to our leaders to be able to take the bold actions. And to do that, you've got to incentivize, and the other one is to allow them and the leeway to take risks and not penalize them when they make mistakes.
We need to call forward a person who has made a special trip all the way from Beltrami County to be with us this morning. The county administrator from there, Tony Murphy. Please come forward, and we're anxious to hear an example of what one county has been doing to address that. And as Mr. Murphy comes forward, I think most of you, maybe some of the newer members, are not aware of what the Association of Minnesota Counties did last year in coming forward with a very comprehensive plan on how we could redesign the relationship between the counties and the state on a whole host of issues, a very bold and courageous thing that the counties did, and we give them lots of credit for that. And here we have before us now an example of a county administrator who is working to do the kinds of things we need to do in state government. So, Mr. Murphy, please identify yourself for the tape. And
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tony Murphy. I'm the Beltrami County Administrator with county seat in beautiful Bemidji. I'm grateful to be with you today and to share with you some of the highlights of a journey that we've been on in Beltrami County to implement some of the principles of outcome-based government. And we've been engaged in that effort for about 4 years. And I'm pleased to be able to take a little bit of your time to share a county perspective of many of the good things that Mr. Khanna was speaking about more at the state level. I think the best place for me to start is just I hope that all of you have a four-page handout that I prepared for our meeting today, our gathering today. I won't go through that point by point, but I will generally follow that as I step through some highlights of some of the information that I provided to you. Certainly the handout goes into a little bit more detail. But let me begin by just reminding everybody kind of the role of counties in the state of Minnesota. Our function has traditionally been to be the service delivery arm of state government. We administer those programs and services that are deemed most important by the state of Minnesota. And it should come as no surprise to anyone then that if that's what we do, and 85% of what we do in Beltrami County originates from some kind of a directive or order or mandate or regulation or rule or statute coming from the state of Minnesota. 85% of what we do is essentially what you tell us to do. And so it should really come as no surprise that that how we do business, how our very basic personality functions, arises out of that mandate that we receive from state government. I often refer to that as a service delivery management orientation. Our focus is on the providing of services, programs, and to try to do that as efficiently as we can. That's who we are. We put it on our bumper stickers, you know, we paint it on our squad cars. This provision of outstanding services is kind of our label, our moniker. That's who we are. Unfortunately, some of the side effects of that is that we also then determine our success based on that criteria. Our success as a county is largely determined by how much money we spend and how many people we attract and serve in our services and programs. Our entire focus is on those kinds of input factors into how we do business. Literally, that is the root and the genesis of most of the mandates that we are required to follow, maintenance of effort requirements, case management strategies. Really, much of what we do is so that at the end of the day, we can provide evidence that we have either increased how much we spend or we've increased our reach to the number of people on our services and programs. Literally, there is an incentive under this format that we operate under to grow programs and to grow services. The rationale is the more we can develop that, the more good we can provide. Our relationship with state government, I've been involved in state and local government for 22 years, and it seems like the dialogue that we typically have as county or city officials with the state is more around the issue of mandates. What is it that you're telling us to provide, and who's going to pay for it? Very, very infrequently does that dialogue and that debate revolve around whether the mandate actually works. Are the services, are the programs actually producing results? What's lost in the service delivery management orientation is the dialogue and discussion about whether what we're doing is really making a difference. That is what I believe needs to change. Mr. Khanna has so well explained, what's happening all around us is forcing us to consider these kinds of changes, whether they're changes in demographics, changes in the economy, or just changes in expectations of the citizens, which I consider positive. There's less tolerance now, it seems, to just simply do business as usual. There is more priority being placed on, are you accomplishing quantifiable, defined results or outcomes? We had a county board. We don't like to call them retreats. I guess we all call them retreats, don't we, though? But we got away for a couple of days as a county about 4 years ago in January, and we forced ourselves with a facilitator in Beltrami County to look at who we are and who we're going to become. And we recognized and we confronted the fact that Beltrami County probably has one of the lowest tax capacities of any county in the state. We also confronted ourselves with the fact that we have among the highest tax effort of any county in the state. We have among the highest poverty factors of any county in the state. And then we looked at the services that we provide and the demand for those services and programs. And we really began to realize at that point that many of the services and programs that we provide, we do very well, as measured by whether we're in compliance with the regulatory requirements coming out of the state. But we do very poorly in many of those programs if you measure it on the basis of, are we changing the lives of our citizens and constituents? We had to confront the fact that we're really not doing a very good job on the basis of outcomes. We also, at that meeting, at that retreat, at that setting, we admitted that this course that we are on, this service delivery management course that we're on, is really not sustainable. I give our county board in Beltrami County a great deal of credit because they reached that conclusion before the Great Recession. This was a decision that we made, a conclusion that we reached before the bottom fell out of everything. We made a decision 4 years ago in January to begin the process of reinventing ourselves and doing it along the basis of an outcome-based government. We decided that we can't be successful any longer as a service delivery entity alone. We must be an outcome-based entity. And we started in that process. One of the things we had to do is to try to define, there was a question earlier today, try to define what that means, what does outcome-based government mean. It's called a lot of different things. Results-oriented government, outcome-based government, has basis and principles of performance management. We have chosen to call what we're doing strategy-aligned management. And the literature, as we reviewed it, seemed to indicate that there are five principles in this new effort, this new initiative that's really arising not just here, but arising out of necessity around the world. The first principle, and I've listed these in the handout, is that you better understand and put first the priorities of the citizens. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am somewhat embarrassed to admit that many of my county employees really believe that their customer is someone that they are serving at a regulatory agency in St. Paul. They really believe that the person they have to satisfy or the person they need to keep happy is someone who writes an audit or conducts a review or someone who is administering a program from a distance. In many ways, in county government, we have started to lose touch with the people that we are either elected or appointed or hired to serve our citizens, our neighbors, our family members, our people who are there next to us in our communities. That has to change. The second principle is that you need to establish objective targets and quantify those targets. What are the targets that you're really trying to reach? And define those, communicate those. If you have targets established, then you can determine those leading and lagging indicators of success. Those measures, quantitative measures that can chart whether you're getting closer to your target or not. Now, those measures, those indicators of success, are the things that should be keeping a guy like me awake at night, determining whether we're getting closer to where we're supposed to be or not. The fourth area, fourth principle of outcome-based government, is that there needs to be a climate of innovation. There needs to be a willingness to assume some level of risk, some environment of being able to enable new ideas, good ideas, and allow those to go forward. And fifth, you have to be held accountable. Accountable not just for services, but accountable for actual results. Now, that all sounds well and good, these five basic principles. And I can tell you, because I've given this presentation to a lot of our constituents in Beltrami County, you share these principles with the Lions Club or the Rotary or Kiwanis, and there's a lot of, well, the result is basically two things. We thought that's what you were supposed to be doing all along, and the second thing is get busy and do that. There's a lot of support for that kind of discussion. Let me give you an example that we use a lot to try to illustrate how these five principles work in practice at a county level. I'm going to use the example of chemical dependency treatment. We, at a county level, we have a requirement, we have a mandate, we have an order to provide chemical dependency treatment, usually for those who are ordered by the courts, but sometimes there are other ways they get into that process. I say it's... Thank you. You're an angel.
We agree.
He saw an outcome and he needed to achieve that outcome. We have a mandate to provide these services, and we try to do those very well. We hire nonprofit organizations and others to actually do the chemical dependency treatment. We put them into these systems. And we spend about $1 million a year. There's a maintenance of effort, a cost share requirement at the county level. Beltrami County, we spend more than $1 million a year in state and county dollars doing chemical dependency treatment. We got into our outcome-based government initiative, looked my social services director in the eye. Okay, tell me about the outcomes. What are we getting for results for that $1 million? How many of the people we're putting in a treatment, complete treatment? Mr. County Administrator, we don't know. How many people stay sober after 6 months? Well, Mr. County Administrator, we don't know. Okay. How do you measure success? Well, we measure success because we're meeting the maintenance of effort requirement. We're spending the amount of money that we're supposed to spend, and every person who's ordered to go into this treatment goes to treatment. Can you see the differences there? We began a process, again, to start changing that. Using the five principles, you have to establish a target. What is it that you're really hoping to accomplish? What does the public establish as that highest priority for chemical dependency treatment? Can you quantify that? The answer is yes, you can. What are the indicators of success along the way that you can measure to determine whether you're doing the right things with chemical dependency treatment? You can measure leading and lagging indicators. Some of those indicators might be things like how many actually complete the treatment. Seems like a simple measure. You should be able to track it. How many people are participating in aftercare programs? What level of involvement do you have in families and family supports through the treatment process and after? You can measure these kinds of things. They're not that difficult to do. You don't have to measure everything, but you can measure some key items that can tell you whether you're making progress or not. With that, and if I'm talking to my nonprofit providers and saying, we're going to pay you to provide these services, these are the things we're tracking, those providers then all of a sudden start thinking, I got to start doing some things different. I need to innovate in order to get that client through treatment and to keep them clean for 6 months or for a year. Things start to change. For example, in Beltrami County, we have learned that once we've started to focus on these things, our providers are beginning to realize that they need to have programming that is much more culturally appropriate for the clients that they are serving. And then the final principle of the five is, how do you hold yourself accountable? Well, we're going to report results, but we're also going to enter into outcome-based contracts with those service providers. We're stepping into that slowly because we have a limited number of providers. The last thing you want to do is go into it heavy-handed and put them all out of business and then have nobody to provide that activity. So we're stepping into it. But eventually what we're going to be doing is paying them a certain amount of their contract when people enter treatment. That seems appropriate. Give them another percent of their contract when treatment is completed. And perhaps give them another part of their contract, or maybe even a bonus if those people are clean after 6 months or a year. But can you see how outcome-based principles, outcome-based government, changes the dialogue, it changes the relationships, and it changes how you do business?
A question from Representative Downey.
Actually, I'll go first.
Okay.
Thank you. No, I can explain this, and I can make this sound really simple, but it's really not. There are a lot of challenges. There are a lot of obstacles and barriers to implementing outcome-based government at a county level. For one thing, it takes time. You have to explain to your staff that this isn't one more thing that we're doing. This is a fundamental change in how we do things. Okay, you have to learn a new vocabulary. You have to learn new principles of accountability. You have to help your employees to feel safe as they take risk and as they raise ideas. You have to take more of a long-term strategic view on things. I will tell you that most of the things that have the highest potential for results are often those things that are prevention or early intervention, those things that take a little bit of time and investment to see how we can change things. It means moving some of your resources a little bit from the deep end, high cost areas into those higher return areas. And it involves a high level of risk. Challenging the status quo is not for the faint of heart. You have to be able to protect each other, and you have to be willing to take those calculated and measured risks. I have in my handout with you a few asks that I have here that I would have for Beltrami County as we move forward in our outcome-based effort. And again, I would tell you that we started this 4 years ago when we weren't in crisis. We spent 2 years thoughtfully educating ourselves on what this means, determining our highest priority outcomes objectives, establishing our key performance measures in all of the areas that we do business, our first-generation initiatives and how we're going to move those performance needles. We've been working on that for 4 years in a very thoughtful, methodical pace, but now we're at the point where we're implementing, and we're starting to see some of the results of these things. I can tell you it works. Part of the challenge and part of the ask that I have for you, though, is that we need help removing barriers for this kind of activity. Where do the barriers come from? The barriers come from the, I don't want to be offensive, but the real seat of power in state government, the agencies. If 85% of what we do is mandated, and there's someone at a state agency that makes sure and has a pretty good-sized hammer to make sure we do what we're supposed to do, we have to find, and we spend a lot of time trying to find friends at the agency level who share our beliefs in good government and outcome-based government and who will work with us to try things that are different. And so we need help from time to time to get over some of those rules. Some of them are obsolete. Some of them had good intentions in the beginning, but in the generations of rulemaking processes, we've lost our focus. Some of the rules that have been written just because they can be written and really are not tied at all to outcomes. In fact, I would argue that a majority of the state rules that I operate and work with are not outcome-based rules and guidelines. They are service delivery compliant perspective and basis for all of those rules. I would propose that one of the things that will be needed in time at the state government level is a rewrite of rules around outcomes rather than, again, a service delivery oriented base to that rulemaking. We could really use your help. I don't know if you realize the potential and opportunity that state has for incubators of innovation at the county level. You have some incredibly bright and qualified counties out there right now who are doing and dabbling in these areas of outcome-based government. And they're doing it on their own, and they're doing it in hopes that they don't get penalized for what they're doing. But you have opportunities. Mr. Khanna mentioned this principle of charter agencies. I've been discussing for a couple of years with our elected officials in Beltrami County, wouldn't it be wonderful to have charter counties? If there are counties out there that are willing to try this stuff and be held accountable for what they're doing, why wouldn't you give them some rope as a charter county to go out and innovate and share that innovation and to provide these incubators of innovation and learning? Mr. Chair, I know I'm going to be running short on time, and I really want to leave time for questions and for follow-up, and I do have a number of examples I can share, but I really appreciate this opportunity to, if nothing else today, let you know that there are counties out there, a number of counties out there, who are already pushing this envelope of outcome-based, results-oriented, strategic management that is going to hopefully change how we do business. I know it works. Last 2 years in Beltrami County, we have not increased our property tax levy. We have reduced our property tax levy. Okay. And again, I'm telling you, this is one of the poorest counties in the state of Minnesota. We've reduced our workforce. We are more effective now with fewer employees, 13% less employees than we were with those employees, because we have changed how we do business. I hesitate to tell you this. Please don't use it against me. But the last 2 years, because we've been actively implementing principles of outcome-based government, in the year 2009, when we closed out our budget year, we returned $4 million to our fund reserves. And as we closed out the year 2010, we returned $6 million to fund reserves. $10 million over 2 years. And I believe and know the primary reason is because we are challenging ourselves to look at government different, and we're doing government different at this county level. And if we can do it in Beltrami County, quite frankly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it can be done anywhere. So I open myself up to any questions or follow-up that you'd like to have, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Murphy, thank you so very much. You and your county should be commended for the initiatives that you've undertaken. And you brought up an issue that I was going to raise. And actually, Mr. Khanna, if you would come back to the table here, too, because questions may be directed to both of you. But you brought up the issue of barriers, and I take it from what you've, which I think is a very important thing. We know that we can incentivize innovation and create a better climate for innovation, but we also need to look at what are the barriers, the obstacles that are out there that really get in the way of innovation. And Mr. Murphy, you mentioned that you're finding some cooperation with state agencies, but resistance in other ways. And could you talk a little bit more about that? Are you, in fact, sort of getting mixed signals from the state as to their willingness to let you innovate and do the kinds of outcome-based management that you talk about here? Could you talk a little more about that?
Mr. Chair, I'd love to. Members of the committee, I just want to express my appreciation for those state employees. We have tremendously bright and qualified and capable state employees who are operating, in many cases, in some awful systems. And so part of their mission and part of their goal is to make sure that there is a uniformity, a standardization, a one-size-fits-all in many of these deliveries that we are required to provide in services and programs. In many cases, they will look at a county like Beltrami County, and they will readily admit to us, you're unique, but we can't give you a unique opportunity to change some things. And so they are sometimes handcuffed by the rules that they are charged to administer. Having said that, we find in many cases, many people, many of state employees who work very hard with us to try to find workarounds. But in some cases, if you really want to do something different, you've got to get a bill passed. And that just grinds everything to a halt. So I'm not here to bash state agencies, mm-hmm. because I don't feel that way. But I take some liberty in bashing the system that they work in, because I do think that it is, in many cases, causing us to be not as effective as we can be. We all want to pursue efficiency, but I believe that one of the fastest routes to efficiency is a focus on effectiveness and outcomes. At least that's what we're finding. And so if we could find a way to address many of those rules, I have said somewhat boldly in other settings, if you really want to reform government in Minnesota, one of the fastest ways to do that is to sunset many of these rules. Give the agencies, give the state government a period of time, 2-3 years, whatever it takes. Sunset the rules that are written based on service delivery mechanisms. Rewrite the ones that need to stay under outcome-based philosophies. And we'll find that that will transform the way that we interact with the citizens that we're charged to work with.
Mr. Murphy, I would invite you to give us a list of things that in the human service area that have proven to be problematic or barriers from your standpoint, trying to do good work at the county level. Several of us on this committee are also on the Human Service Committee, and I think I could speak for all of them, saying we welcome suggestions that you might have. This is not the committee to deal with it here, but we would be happy to carry that forward to our other committee. Mr. Khanna, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, did the commission talk at all about barriers out there, the things that really sort of get in the way of trying to do what your commission is recommending we do?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir, indeed, we did talk about barriers, and as a matter of fact, on page 23 in the report, we list some of the barriers and the challenges with that, and they pertain to lack of tools, the lack of benefits, metrics, evaluation, funding, agency silos, overlapping rules, conflicting rules, workforce, how we manage our workforce and the HR policies, which really create a culture of fear rather than one that encourages innovation and risk-taking, even leadership alignment, and then some statutory barriers. So we did talk about it. I think there is an opportunity as the Commission's work continues to drill down more deeper and come up with more specific ideas where remedies can be put in place.
Thank you. Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Murphy, I've spent 30 years in chemical dependency, so I have a question for you in that regard. As you know, people are required to use the six dimensions, which I think could be used for outcome-based. But you were talking about partial payments. And my question for you is probably the barrier question is, how do you do that when you have consolidated fund and the treatment center is required to only submit for payment after person has left, whether or not they're discharged or not? So that's that would be my question to you, and then I have another one on a different topic.
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, representative, members of the committee, that's exactly the kind of issues that we deal with. Now, we believe in how we are approaching the issue of outcome-based contracting is we approach that as essentially a dialogue and a negotiation of equals with those service providers. We know the service providers have literally the same desires as we have, and we are approaching those negotiations about how do we reach our common and our shared objectives, our goals, our outcomes. And we are in the process, as you've identified, of trying to find a workaround for the state reimbursement piece for what we agree at our level is an approach that makes sense. And that's one of 100 type of examples of what we're engaged in. And we get to a certain point in what we're working with, and then we reach these kinds of barriers, which I don't believe are insurmountable barriers, but require a friend at another place to be able to help us to navigate that next step. So far, we're finding those friends.
Okay. Representative Gauthier.
I'll leave one go, but in your handout, you talked about hard-to-serve populations. And in your presentation, you really didn't talk about that. So my question is, how do you define hard-to-serve populations, and how do we address that issue?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, representative, members of the committee, one of the things that we have learned as we continue to work and get deeper and deeper into our outcome-based government approach is that the service delivery and program deliveries that we are mandated to provide, ordered to provide by the state, work very well for the majority of the people that we are supposed to be serving. Okay? But we can identify in many of those programs a smaller class of individuals that, if we do things in that one-size-fits-all approach, it really doesn't create meaningful change in their life or in that other service program. And so we're familiar with the 500 family study in Hennepin County. We've done some similar studies in Beltrami County. And we are in the process now of trying to re-engineer some of our staffing across the silos, across the empires. We call them empires because we're trying to tear down some of the empires, not the silos. But we're trying to get some cross-departmental, cross-disciplinary teams to try to develop some different approaches to those individuals and families that we are identifying. We don't have that figured out yet. We're too new in it, but we have definitely identified it as an area that we must be successful in if we're going to consider ourselves an outcome-based government.
Thank you. Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Murphy, what's the population of Beltrami and how many employees are there now? You said there was a 13% reduction.
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can remember your name, Representative Murphy, members of the committee. Our population of Beltrami County continues to grow at a rather steady and predictable rate. We're right now at about 42,000. We had 400 employees. We're down to under 350 now. Reduction of about 13%, and we don't know how much further we'll be going. But we have not laid anyone off. We've been reducing our staffing through attrition, through normal attrition, and that in itself causes some management concerns. But it's working for us.
Two more,
Representative Murphy,
Mr. Chair, just. You said that you provide services to your customers in Beltrami differently now than you did. Can you give an example? Do you have different office hours, or do you work on Saturdays, or what's the deal?
Mr. Murphy, Representative, let me just give you one example that shows. I'll give you an example from our welfare program. We have a requirement to put people into in job placements as part of our requirements for service delivery. We found that we were having quite a revolving door in the employment placements that we were having with many of the people through the Workforce Center. We also found that when the Workforce Center came to the county board and highlighted their successes, they were highlighting the successes they were finding with plant closures, closing of Ainsworth, for example, or other types of things. And they were highlighting their success on the basis of two-year education programs. They were taking those individuals, retraining them in two-year degrees, and getting them employed somewhere else. Our question became, why aren't you doing that with other people who are in either generational or transitional poverty? And they said, well, the rules don't allow us to do that. We found a workaround. And so now we identify at an earlier stage many of those clients who have a potential for a degree. And we are writing two-year education plans that we weren't writing before for those kinds of clients because we want a better outcome. Under the old service delivery approach, we would have just run them through the mill and not worry about the outcomes at the other end. Now we want to move them, and we have goals to move them from poverty. And we recognize that relationships and education is a big piece of that.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Murphy, I strongly laud you for going outcome-based. That's something that we talk about a lot, but too often we don't set the outcomes out before we start something. But the other thing that I'm puzzled about and chagrined about. You said that sometimes in order to do something differently in a different way, you have to have a law passed, and so that's like a dead end. And that's my words, not yours. But have you, if you could elaborate on that, what makes it? Is it because it's a law that regulates everybody in the state and doesn't allow you to have a waiver or doesn't allow you to do something differently? Or is it, it seems to me, have you tried to do a local bill for that particular problem that you have if the whole system is goofed up? Will you address that?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I need to answer that in a couple different levels. First level is that we recognize that when you ask to do something different, there's always the concern about precedent, because again, we have this 50-year pattern of service delivery orientation. So if you're going to try to do something different, there is the concern of, are we establishing a precedent by allowing one entity to do something different that others aren't doing? And that's a significant hurdle. We wouldn't want to adopt or recommend legislation that the agency didn't understand or couldn't support. But the first thing we hear is, well, that will create a precedent. And we begin to have all of the other, how do I say this in a polite way?
Don't worry about it.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it's never so easy to just pull that one aspect out of a larger body of rules or a larger body. In the case of human services, much of that is in statute rather than in rule. It's a bit of a spider's web, or it's a bit of a, you pull one and it starts tugging other places. And the difficulty for us sometimes is to be able to predict all the other places that will unravel as you are pursuing the goal of that one smaller aspect that you need to get at. That's not unsurmountable, but it is a little bit intimidating, particularly when again, you're a relatively poor county, you're some distance away from the capital, you don't want to hire lobbyists to go and do that stuff. It's a challenge. Just put it that way, it's a challenge. I think that a more effective approach to that would be something that I heard Mr. Connors say, this idea of charter agencies. Would it be possible for a center of innovation, a county of innovation, to receive some kind of a charter designation that would allow us to work with a representative body or an entity that would allow us to have that certain level of cover, that certain blessing or rope enough to hang ourselves with to be able to try those innovations without having to bring everything into statute? Sometimes we don't want it in statute because we don't know if it's going to work. But we want the ability to try it. And we want the ability to fail, even if that's the case. So I hope I've answered your question, Representative.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Representative Banyan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the interest of time, because we're running short, I'll just make a comment about what Mr. Murphy has said. And then I'm glad you came back, Mr. Connick, because I have a question for you, sir. I'm very interested in this because you made what I think is the key point here. We've gone through at St. Cloud State, where I work, forming key performance indicators in the interest of creating a strategic plan for our university. And one of the things I always worried about in creating those plans is whether or not we're measuring inputs or outcomes. It is a key problem in any of these types of plans that I see agencies and my university do. What gets measured gets done. I'm always a little concerned about making sure that the outcomes that we measure are the outcomes that really matter to us. And I would have asked whether or not we could figure out a way, whether or not we're measuring the right things, because I worry that sometimes we measure that which we can see regardless of whether it's the right thing to measure. And sometimes the thing that we really want to measure and the outcome we really want is difficult for us because it's not measurable. in any real way. So I'll defer that question, you know, because I know other people want to ask it. But let me ask my question to Mr. Khanna. I live in St. Cloud. There are three counties that go through St. Cloud. I had a friend who passed away, who lives in the Sherburn County part of St. Cloud. The county seat is in Elk River. Normally, an autopsy is done because he died outside of a hospital. Would have gone to Elk River. Would have been a stress for his wife. But there's an informal rule that says, you know what, if it happens in the St. Cloud part of the county, it's okay for the Stearns County auditor, who's right across the river in Stearns County, to perform the autopsy. So sometimes there's these informal rules that break down these silos that I think counties create. But we really have an issue, and this is true for us in St. Cloud, where we've got three counties, we've got one city, we've got a school district. And there are lots of elected officials who want to have their own building, they want to have their own fire ladder, they want to have their stuff. How many of the silos we have here are jurisdictional rather than agency-based, okay? Because you've probably been around here long enough to hear the stories about trying to create a different county structure around St. Cloud. I'd like your opinion on that. What do you think about the silos that are created by having counties overlapping within a city?
Mr. Khanna.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, members of the committee, trying to count that, I lost all my hair because it was just too big an exercise. I think we've got to stop staring at the problem, and we've got to start moving towards saying what's the vision for a different organizational structure for government. And the last comment that my colleague over here made was that there has to be leeway for trying things differently and leeway for making some mistakes. I think we cannot have an architecture or a design of a new model of government that's more efficient and is more cross-cutting, more cross-jurisdictional, without experimenting and trying and giving some leeway. So what the leadership can do is really try and create that climate of innovation by promoting and encouraging that, so that there's some experimentation would happen. To give you an example of cross-boundary collaboration, when we in Minnesota implemented our unemployment insurance system, at the forums that I participated nationally, I shared that with other colleagues, CIOs from other states, and Iowa was looking to redesign its unemployment insurance system. We got $45 million from Department of Labor in Washington, D.C. And I said to them, why don't you forklift and take the system and use it? So the first reaction was, we've got jurisdictional differences. And I said, let's apply the 80-20 rule. Maybe there's an 80% commonality or 20% commonality. Take that much. It'll reduce the cost. To cut the long story short, they came here, they saw what we had put in place, and the credit goes to Deed and the people who worked on that system that was implemented here in Minnesota. It was, at that time, 4 years ago, quite cutting edge. They pretty much took the system, and it cost them $2.7 million to implement. So they were able to go back and look at the rules that were going to be, that caused extra design and cost impact. There's no reason why we in government should not be thinking cross-jurisdictional. So you're absolutely right, sir. You're on to something, because it's not just within the state, it could be across the boundaries as well. And then the possibilities and the results of that would be just phenomenal, if only there's a leeway to do that. And I think so the commission is trying to point out that we need that innovative environment to be created. And our hope is that this kind of conversation would lead to that.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try and ask, if I could, a couple of really quick questions of Mr. Murphy, and this is really, really good stuff. Really great contribution to what we're tackling down here. So you started 4 years ago. If you had to kind of gauge what percent complete you are you just in the very beginning 1-2% stage, or do you feel like you're halfway there, or how much more do you have to go, and how long do you think it would take to get mature in this concept?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, member of the committee, in some areas I would say we are further along than 2%. To be honest, we went slow. We weren't starting in a crisis. We were starting from a very good position, a healthy position, and but we're I would answer your question by saying we're now at the fun stage. We're now at the stage where you get to start implementing new initiatives and new ideas, and we're at the stage now where we're starting to look at how is that needle going to move? How fast is that indicator going to move? This year that we just passed our budget, the end of the year, our county budget, it's the first budget we've adopted that I would consider an outcome-based budget. And so if you really want to have meaningful change, you've got to incorporate and embed it into your financial structures. And so we have just, for the first time, and you know, just this year, we're embedding it. And so now from there, we expect that we're just, the pace for us is going to continue to quicken, and we're going to have more examples of quality outcomes. But we're still early, sure. We're still early.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you can give me a yes, no, maybe one-word answer here, because I know there's other people behind me. Are you actually able to kind of track, you mentioned your reserves grew. Can you track that back to the specific program or outcome type measure that's actually driving those savings?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, representative, yes.
Thank you. And then one final question. I know the Association of Counties has come up with this concept of a service delivery authority that would kind of supersede current jurisdictional definitions, as Representative Banyan was talking about. Are you familiar with that, and is that starting to percolate into the counties, and are you exploring how to kind of get outside your own jurisdictional boundaries to deliver these services?
Mr. Murphy? Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm very aware of the service delivery approach to human services. Not a big fan. I think we can spend an awful lot of time in government reorganizing boundaries and consolidations and those kinds of things, and we can get a certain level of return on that effort. But we think there's a bigger bang for that if we ask more fundamental questions related to outcomes. I'm not sure that we have too many service delivery entities. My questions are, should we be delivering services or should we be delivering outcomes? It's a different dialogue. And so we're certainly tracking that. To some extent, we may participate in it. But what I'm proposing is a different discussion than just provide all the same services, just change who's going to do that and consolidate and reorder some of those things. I think there's a bigger bang out there.
Members, we're out of time. We have two more on the list. A quick question, Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Murphy, Mr. Connor mentioned before that if you were to back out of something or to take the risk of try something and then all of a sudden it doesn't work and you're going to suffer some loss, just like the $10 million that someone said that Cal Ludeman, I guess, had said, we're cutting it. You mentioned that you had received or that you gained $4 million and $6 million, $10 million. Was the cost of backing out or redoing this a part of that savings, or is there cost on top of that?
Mr. Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's kind of a long answer, but I will just tell you briefly that one of the principles of outcome-based budgeting is a discussion and dialogue of priorities. And so if you have a service delivery management orientation and you're going to make budget decisions based on which services are most important, that's you can't get anywhere. But if you have dialogues about what the outcomes are most important, then you can start prioritizing those resources to other things. What we're finding, we are saving some money by looking at outcomes. We're wanting to use those savings to invest in outcome-based approaches, primarily in the area of early intervention, prevention type of things that will save us money. And the issue is not money for us as much as it is, the issue is vision and leadership and a whole new dialogue of how we do business.
Thank you.
Representative Erdahl, and then we need to call it a day. We have to approve the minutes yet, too. So, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
I'll accept your motion to approve minutes.
And they were great minutes, some of the best that I read. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Murphy, very quickly, what percent of your county budget is mandated by state or federal?
Mr. Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think both from a program standpoint and a dollar perspective, we're probably still looking about 85%.
What?
I move the approval of the minutes.
Minutes from the meeting of January 25th. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Mr. Khanna and Mr. Murphy, thank you very, very much for your good work on the commission. Mr. Khanna, and we have some order. We haven't adjourned yet. We want to thank Mr. Khanna and Mr. Murphy very much for a very informative discussion, and we look forward to continuing to work on the ideas that you've well outlined for us here today. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.